feedback they provided as well. And at this time, I will turn over the Department of Revenue attorney who will walk through provisions of the bill.
Welcome, and please introduce yourself for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeremy Iden, and I'm an attorney for the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I'll be going over Article 1, which is the corporate franchise and income tax section. Section 1 changes the or clarifies the net income calculation for composite tax returns to make clear that the foreign income provisions passed last year are included. Section 2 removes some superfluous inflationary language from the state dependent exemption. Section 3 clarifies three things in the losses deduction. One, it makes clear that losses that are not otherwise compensated by insurance or other means are deductible. Two, it makes clear that the losses incurred for a transaction for profit, but not related to a greater business, and casualty losses are included. And three, it makes clear that the losses incurred for a transaction not or for profit but not included in a trade or business and the casualty and theft losses are limited by the 2% floor as they were under prior law. Section 4 clarifies 290-191 to make clear that that the sale of derivatives should not be included in the sales factor. Section 5 changes the Minnesota withholding exemptions. As Minnesota and the federal government, or the federal tax code, have diverged when we moved to federal adjusted gross income, it became necessary that Minnesota move to a Minnesota withholding calculation to make sure that the right amount of tax is withheld. And Section 6 clarifies the special limited adjustment to clarify that the special limited adjustment applies to individual income taxpayers, trust payers, trusts and estates. And that concludes Article 1.
All right, members, we're going to go by article. So are there any questions or concerns on Article 1? All right, see none. Thank you, Mr. Iden. Good morning. Welcome. Please state your name for the record and move that mic a little closer to you if you want to. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Melissa Tape, an attorney with the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Mr. Chair and members, I will be covering Article 2 of the Department's bill, partnership tax. As many of you have heard our testimony on the Department's partnership proposal in the past, I will begin by highlighting the differences in the language from the Department's 2019 proposal and the current 2020 proposal. Then I will give an overview of the 2020 proposal language you have in front of you. Because the Department's 2020 partnership article maintains current law for statutes and limitations related to revenue agent reports adjustments, we removed the sections of the article that rewrote those statutes to avoid confusion regarding administration of those laws. We also incorporated the new definitions into those laws to provide clarity. Additionally, some technical changes were made to the language to incorporate the multi-state tax commission's model language that was not finalized until after the beginning of Minnesota's 2019 legislative session. As a general overview of the 2020 language you have in front of you, this article addresses changes in federal law that were made as part of the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2015. As a result, the Minnesota statutes must be amended to account for the new federal laws regarding partnership audits, specifically the new federal process of issuing tax orders at the partnership or entity level rather than at the partner level. The reporting sections for general federal audit assessments, amended returns, refund claims, and assessment in current Minnesota law will be amended to incorporate new definitions, but there will be no substantive change to the way Minnesota administers its law in those instances. The proposal maintains the longstanding statutes of limitations following federal adjustments that govern not only partnerships, but many other tax types, including individuals, corporations, estates, fiduciaries, and others. The main focus of the proposed language addresses adjustments resulting from the new federal centralized partnership audit regime. Minnesota ordinarily imposes filing and payment requirements on tax-paying partners when they have either filed an amended return or received an assessment of tax from the Internal Revenue Service. But federal tax on partnership audit adjustments may now be assessed and paid at the partnership entity level without the tax-paying partners filing amended returns or receiving assessments. Therefore, Minnesota needs additional authority as well as a process for assessing state taxes on federal partnership entity level audit adjustments. This is accomplished through the proposed language by adding a new statute section providing the requirement that taxpayers report federal adjustments at the partnership level. This proposal requires partnerships to pay the same Minnesota tax following a federal audit adjustment that each partner would have paid had they correctly reported their tax liability on their originally filed return. With that, I will take you through the components of Article 2. Sections 1 through 7 and 10 through 15 make various conforming changes to correct cross-references to the Revenue Agents Report, or RAR statute, throughout the administrative chapter and the changes in other sections. Additionally, the new definitions in Section 8 are incorporated into the RAR statute section. In Section 8, you will notice that there are 19 new definitions added as part of this article. These definitions are codified in a new section that is in front of the state partnership statute as they relate primarily to the new partnership adjustments. But there are some general definitions included that relate to the reporting of general liabilities following adjustments by the Internal Revenue Service. Primarily, the new definitions relate to specific types of partners and specific types of partnerships, and those definitions are to facilitate a statute that contemplates reporting for complex tiered partnership structures. Section 9 codifies a new section at 289 Cap A 382 and begins at page 18, line 1 in the legislation and on page 2 of the summary. There is a state partnership representative who is able to make decisions that are binding on the partnership as to state tax matters. This is generally going to be the same person as the federal partnership representative, though taxpayers will be able to name a different state partnership representative if they wish. The next two subdivisions get to the substantive reporting requirements.
But let's just end here for a second while we see if we can. My apologies, but I don't know if
we hit mute on everyone.
I don't know if there's, we could get maybe staff down here. And, yeah, let's just recess here just for, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, and that tended to solve it.
Nothing to do with the mic.
Well, there it is, Representative Leslie Gard. Yeah. So, and you know, by having that mic unplugged, not only takes away several sounds, it benefits us in many different ways today. So, thank you very much. All right. So, while we have this recess, and thank you, Representative Leslie Gard. Let me just catch up here, and then we're going to do a few things. So we went into session here about, we called the meeting order about 8:12, and the recording started at about 8:18. So there's about 6 minutes we didn't have a recording. And just what happened during that time, and we're going over House File 3389, is that in that 6 minutes, Mr. Iden, from the Department of Revenue, went over Article 1 of House File 3389. At the completion of his description of Article 1 of that bill, there were no questions from members of the Taxes Committee. And so I think that kind of covers probably what we had here. And so before we go any further, let's take some motions while we have a natural break here. And so Representative Leslie Gard, would you approve the minutes or maybe...
I think I can do it. Mr. Chairman,
Chair Davids, would you like to approve or make a motion on the March 3rd, 2020 minutes?
So moved.
Chair Davids moves approval of the March 3rd, 2020 minutes. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The March 3rd, 2020 minutes are approved. I then will move House File 3389 for possible inclusion into a tax omnibus bill. And then I would like to move the A20-0654 amendment, which basically deletes the property tax portions of this bill. That property tax portions were heard Monday in the division, property tax division. So I have any comments, questions on that amendment? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on the A20-0654 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. All right. Thank you very much. I think where we're supposed to be. So, Ms. Tape, if you would proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
And Representative Becker-Finn, thank you for that technical advice today. So,
former CLA.
Very good. Please proceed.
I believe we were at section 9, which begins at page 18, line 1 in the legislation, and on page 2 of the summary. We will start with the second and third subdivisions. Is this better?
Yes. Close.
Okay. So the next two subdivisions get to the substantive reporting requirements for partners with entity-level federal assessments. There is basically a two-track system consisting of a default and then an option. The default track is that partnerships will continue to be required to do what they are already required to do under Minnesota current law, which is when there is an adjustment made at the federal level, they will report those changes within 180 days to their direct partners. Within 90 days, they will also file amended composite income tax returns. The default system is if the partnership receives a federal assessment, it will act as an information reporting conduit that is similar to the way partnership law has operated in the state to date. The second track is an election that the partnership is allowed to make at the state level under Subdivision 3, starting at page 19, line 5. If the partnership makes an election to pay the liability at the partnership level, they will file a federal adjustments report within 90 days with the Commissioner of Revenue, and after 180 days, they will go through a calculation where they will determine how much liability the partnership should owe at the state level. What you'll see as part of the amendment is that there is an exemption here where you're not allowed to make the election if you're reporting an adjustment that's made after an administrative adjustment request or if you have a unitary corporate partner. This is because there are concerns about the way the apportionment would work in those situations, that we might be opening up a planning opportunity for people who use the election, so in those two areas, the election is not allowed. The fourth subdivision, starting at page 20, line 13, provides that for that each partnership entity that is in a tiered structure, the top partnership tier chooses not to make the election, and they act as an information reporting conduit by sending information to the next tier. The second partnership down the line can still make the election to pay at the entity level. This way, in each tier, partnership management may decide that they would like to utilize the election in order to ease administrative burden. Each time you go down one of the tiers, it requires information reporting to the state and to the individual partners, and then each of those individual partners has a filing obligation following that. The provisions in this article are effective retroactively to account for both those partnerships that are required to pay federal assessments at the partnership level, which became effective for taxable years beginning after December 31, 2017, as well as those partnerships that made an early opt-in election to be assessed at the partnership level before the general federal effective date of taxable years beginning after December 31, 2017. This concludes Article 2.
Members, questions? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it sounds like most of this audit stuff for partnerships is required when the audit requires a payment by the partnership. What if the audit allows for then a refund? Is that same paperwork have to be done? Does the state then have to do that? How does that work?
Ms. Tate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Yes, the same paperwork goes through whether it's an assessment or a claim for a refund.
Chair Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see on the agenda here that we have the CPAs testifying. There's some red flags popping up for me in Article 2, but I'd like to, I guess I'll ask my questions after they testify. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sounds good. Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Not? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Welcome. Please state your name for the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Joshua Sandy. I'm an attorney at the Department of Revenue. I will be walking you through the miscellaneous article, which as amended is Article 3. Many of these provisions were previously in Article 5 prior to the bill amendment. And it's my understanding that while you have an updated summary, you may not have updated language yet. So I've been asked to try and cross-reference the sections from the amended bill with the article and section of the original language so that you can easily follow along if you're looking at the bill language that you have in front of you. Section 1, as amended, which was Article 5, Section 2, prior to amendment, amends Statute Section 270C.445, Subdivision 3. This is the statute that prohibits a paid tax preparer from depositing client refunds into the preparer's own bank account. The amendment clarifies and addresses the ways that a refund can be paid to a taxpayer, namely by a paper check or direct deposit.
It's members, we're on page 51 of the kind of the original bill here.
Thank you, Mr. Please. Chair. Section 2, which was Article 5, Section 3, prior to amendment, amends the June accelerated sales tax payment percentages and references to percentages so that they correctly match the match from paragraph B to paragraph C in the subdivision. This provides clarification to those taxpayers with sales tax liability above $250,000. Section 3, which was Article 5, Section 5, prior to amendment, amends the liquor gross receipts tax in Chapter 295 to clarify by adding explicit language that a liquor retailer may, but is not required to, collect the liquor gross receipts tax from the purchaser and that the tax is excluded from sales price for purposes of sales tax if separately stated on the receipt given to the purchaser. This amendment clarifies the intent of the legislature in 2005, is consistent with the department's longstanding interpretation of the law, and also aligns with the streamlined sales tax agreement and its rules concerning sales price. Section 4, which was Article 5, Section 6, prior to amendment, amends Minnesota Statute Section 296A06, Subdivision 2, to correct an omission of the word special when referring to special fuel dealers. Section 5, which was Article 5, Section 7, prior to amendment, adds language to the Marketplace Provider Statute to clearly indicate that a marketplace provider is deemed to be the retailer or seller for all retail sales the marketplace provider facilitates. This is a necessary clarification given that most other provisions in the sales tax chapter use the term seller or retailer when referring to the entity that is required to collect and remit the taxes. Additionally, this language will serve to clarify that a marketplace provider is considered to be in the business of selling goods of all kinds, and thus sales placed through a marketplace provider are considered sales made in the normal course of business and not isolated or occasional sales. Section 6, which was Article 5, Section 8, prior to amendment, amends Minnesota Statute Section 297F04, Subdivision 2, Paragraph 5, to add the words or tobacco products after the word cigarettes. If you look at paragraph 5 where the proposed language is located, you'll see that all other uses of the word cigarettes are followed by the words or tobacco products. And this one instance just appears to be an omission. So this amendment adds the words or tobacco products to fix that omission and make it consistent with the remainder of the paragraph. Because it's related to section 6, I'm going to jump down to section 10 next. This was Article 5, Section 12, prior to amendment. Section 10 is an amendment to Minnesota Statute Section 609B.153, which has a cross-reference to Minnesota Statute Section 297F04, Subdivision 2, Paragraph 5, which is what is being amended in Section 6 of the bill. This proposal amends the cross-reference to keep the language consistent in both sections. Next, I'll jump back to sections 7 and 9. These were in Article 5, sections 9 and 11 prior to amendment. These two sections are related to accelerated tax payments for cigarette tax, tobacco tax, and liquor tax. There were some last-minute changes made at the end of the 2019 special session, and these proposed amendments are being made just to improve the organization and readability of the statutes. Finally, Section 8, which was Article 5, Section 10 prior to amendment, amends Minnesota Statute Section 297F17, Subdivision 1, to delete unnecessary language regarding a notice requirement. Since Minnesota Statute Section 270C.33, Subdivision 8, already provides the guidelines for how notice of tax assessments are to be provided to the taxpayer, there is no need for the notice requirement language in Minnesota Statute Section 297F17. Subdivision 1. And that completes Article 3.
Members, any questions on the miscellaneous article? Representative Fabian.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a more of a process question. So in the bill as we have it in front of us on page 54 and 55, I'm just curious to know the testifier, and I believe is it Mr. Sandy?
Yes.
Made mention of going back and looking at the intent of the legislature in 2005, I believe you said.
Correct.
Here we are 15 years later. How does something like this come about?
Mr. Sandy.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm actually going to defer to my colleague Susan Berry, who is a little bit more well-versed in the sales tax arena, to answer that question.
Welcome. Ms. Berry, if you would identify yourself.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative. My name is Susan Berry. I'm an attorney with the Department of Revenue. As to the intent, that comes from listening to tapes that of back in 2005, you know, of testimony and discussion of the bill for the gross receipts tax at the time.
So, Representative Fabian, that's why these tapes are important.
So, I've had some bills that have been misinterpreted, I can tell you that. But,
Representative Fabian.
Then also the same thing on page 57 in the bill. We're deleting a bunch of language in that, what is labeled in that before it's amended to Section 10. You said that this language is no longer relevant or whatever terms you used. Again, just a process question. How does that come to be, and how long has that language been in statute, and now it's no longer needed?
Great question. So, you know, at what point is it decided things are obsolete, or when it's been many, many years? Yes. Mr. Sandy.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you're referring to Section 10, is that right?
The amendment? Yeah, on page 57.
So, as I understand it, there was this is so in 297F, which is the tobacco cigarette section, there's kind of an archaic notice requirement. And then eventually 270C was enacted that had notice requirements that were more general to a lot of different tax types. And as we've interpreted it, they both apply to tobacco tax and cigarette tax in some circumstances. So, like 297F, for example, required us to send notice to the address on the return, whereas 270C, the more current statute, required us to send it to the last known address. So, in an instance where maybe those were different, we ended up having to send notice to two different addresses. We just thought that was pointless, and since 270C controls and will provide notice, we didn't think both of them were necessary.
Anything else on the miscellaneous article? Very good. So, Ms. Bears, anything further?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to expand a little bit about what Josh had stated, is we often look through our statutes to make sure that everything is clear and that nothing needs to be clarified. And so sometimes when we do our annual reviews, we do notice these items that need to be updated. And that's how we decide to put those in our policy and technical bill.
Very good. Mr. Fragnito, I know, would like to testify, and if anyone else would like to, get ready. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and thank you. I'm Gino Fragnito. I'm the Government Relations Director at the Minnesota CPA Society, and just wanted to call attention to a couple concerns that the CPAs have with Article 2, the partnership audits. And one of those concerns is addressed in the letter that Cost had submitted to the committee as it relates to the indirect and direct partner reporting requirements. Our belief is in line with theirs that it would create some burdens and possibly more than likely would prevent some partnerships from using this structure. We've been working with the department on language and compromise and trying to come to an agreement, and we continue to have those conversations. Wanted to highlight the indirect and direct partner piece. We also have been in discussions with them related to the statute of limitations on the RAR reports, and so we're hopeful that we'll be able to come to a resolution on that. And then the third piece that we have some concerns about, we have it relates to the potential abuse of the partnership structure, and Representative Davids has a bill that the CPAs support that has some language in place that would address some of the concerns that the department has expressed to us. So wanted to have that on the record that we're working with them and continue to work with them, but still do have some concerns with this section.
Very good. So, Mr. Fragnito, is it kind of all of Article 2, or are there specific parts you could point to? Or is it just kind
it would
of
be the treatment of the direct partners and the indirect partners, and the reporting of that is a concern. The RAR report language and the statute of limitations would be the second, and then the third is not in the department's bill but is in Representative David's bill and is our attempt to address their concerns that they had conveyed to us about potential abuse of the partnership reporting structure and using the partnership pay versus having the partners pay the assessments.
Very good. So there's concerns on Article 2.
Yes. Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Davids or Representative? Yeah, Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, generally in a policy technical bill, and we've had this happen in the past where it's supposed to be a policy technical bill, and it's not always policy and it's not always technical. These are supposed to be bills that are agreed to by all parties and can just go through and life is good. I hope you were listening to Mr. Fragnito. I know how to speak CPA, and when a CPA says they have concerns, they are going out of their mind. So I hope that we can see the CPAs and the department work on this further so that we do have peace in the valley, because it's not there now. And as we move forward, maybe this needs to be taken to the side, because like I said, and Mr. Chairman, you know that policy technical bills are supposed to be just that. They're not supposed to have the controversy, and when CPAs speak up on something, I do listen, and I know that the committee will also. So thank you.
I appreciate that. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious. Mr. Fragnito, you said in your testimony that I believe you said that revenue is concerned about potential abuse. So, Mr. Chair, I'd like someone from revenue to come down and discuss potential abuse and if that's actually something that may happen or something that is happening.
Okay. Ms. Tape?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. We don't have a partnership audit regime statute on the books yet, so it hasn't happened yet. It's something that could happen in the future. One example of what could happen is that an entity structure could add a tier as a partnership above the end partners that would be out of state. And thus, as opposed to having 100% of those Minnesota partners be taxed in Minnesota, it would be taxed at that out-of-state apportionment level, which could greatly and significantly reduce the partnership tax that would be due and owing to the state. We do sometimes see these sort of schemes happen in other areas. One example is the Associated Bank case that went to the Minnesota Supreme Court not too long ago, where that financial institution established an LLC in the state of Wisconsin to avoid tax in Minnesota. this legislation proposed and passed legislation to change the definition of financial institution at the conclusion of that case.
Chair Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm intrigued by some of the department's language talking about schemes and regimes. Kind of reminds me of the movie The Wolf of Wall Street here. But I just wanted to define what a CPA is, and I have the utmost respect for CPAs. But just by definition, a CPA is an actuary with a personality.
So any other testifiers that would like to testify on House File 3389 as amended? Okay, thank you. Anything else from members? And Chair Davids, take your comments very seriously. It's been the tradition of the Tax Committee that when these policy and technical bills come through, that if there's angst and so forth, that we work very hard to get those areas resolved by all parties before it moves to prime time, so to speak. So that would be my intention.
And Mr. Chairman, I really appreciate those comments. Thank you.
Thank you to the department. And with that, I would like to move to lay over House File 3389 as amended for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. All right. Anything else for the good of the order? That tomorrow, here are some bills. Remember, as a reminder, next Wednesday, this time is going to be used by the Property Tax Division. And so just kind of keep that in mind. So just tax members, you will have the day off. So there you go. Right. Members, thank you for the work today. We are adjourned. Hey.